Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Admiral Phillips, aboard the time ship USS Future Imperfect. I want to preface this episode with saying that the show will be taking a slightly different tone and direction in the future. With the dawn of 2018, and there's going to be more segments. I'm going to kind of break it up and have like a little bit of news, a little bit of Twitter conversations, the reviews of the episodes, maybe like kind of a brief recap, and like a Elkar segment returning, and the predictions for the future of the show of Star Trek Discovery. And so I feel like this will give everyone more of a new, fresh approach to the podcast and more of a well-rounded touch to it. I don't suspect it'll go over 40 minutes. If it does, it'll be because I have guests. So speaking of which, Captain Dodd is on the mend, who's at Starfleet Medical, and could possibly return in the near future, along with his number one, Ryan the Uneven Flow. So we could be seeing some influx of fresh crew to the USS Future Imperfect. So first on the agenda is the Star Trek news. Viacom. There's rumors that Viacom, which actually owns or used to own CBS and had spun it off in 2005, may be looking to recombine with the dawn of Disney purchasing Fox, which kind of lends itself to interesting discussions, because we could see the future of Star Trek kind of tied back into its TV roots with the films, much like the original Star Trek universe, the original Prime universe before Abrams rebooted the whole thing. And so I think that we could see something beneficial. This may also help explain the issues that we've been having with continuity problems. Because that's the one thing that I've noticed, is that the continuity has not been... They have held very close to it, but they've changed and updated a lot of things visually and aesthetically, and technologies that aren't present in later series. And I feel like they would have been better off with a reboot, and I've had plenty of Twitter conversations and Twitter wars with that over the past 6 months anyway, and especially the last night. And I think that this could be beneficial, and I say this because this may be why some of the things that have happened the way that they have in the Star Trek universe haven't meshed as they used to or once had. And so I think that this may be a good thing. And I don't think that we're going to see that much of a change or an influx of anything, actually, if this remerging of the two split companies. I don't think there's going to be that big of a difference in what you see on screen. But you could end up with more of a shared universe, which means we could, with the influx of the Abramsverse, because let's face it, Discovery more or less fits in the Abramsverse to some degree. It fits, like, no matter what, like, Enterprise pretty much fits that. Either timeline, because the Splinter doesn't happen until pre-Kirk. So even if you want to play that route with it, I think that we could see more of the Abrams, like you could see the Abrams, Spock, and Kirk, and McCoy, and all that cast show up on Discovery, which is on an all-access app, which means they spend a lot more money on it. There's less episodes. They could show up for a quick cameo. You could have a combined universe, and it wouldn't really affect anything, unlike, you know, Marvel, where they've kind of screwed the pooch on that. So I think that this could be a good thing. However, it's not really going to make that big of an impact. And so I think that, as a whole, it's kind of a... in a sense, a nothing burger. So I also saw this kind of interesting geek history piece of the fact that they tried to make Captain Picard wear a wig. And I've seen the picture of this, and it looks rather odd. I'm glad that they went with the bald look for Picard in the show. I'm very glad that they did. He kind of reminds me of like that Robert Keel from the other ship from the conspiracy episode of season one. Walker Keel. He kind of looks like that, and it looks really weird to see Patrick Stewart with hair because he's been bald for so long or had that look for so long. It's just hard for me to look at him and not see that. And to see this picture is very different. But yeah, it was for the screen test, I guess. The test photo of him wearing a wig for the role. And I'm quite pleased that they didn't go that route and just kind of left it alone. So, I don't know. So, there's been a lot of Twitter war. I've been all over this. We were kind of conversing about it last night. I've had a lot in terms of, like, there's this Star Trek OT, the original timeline, that follows me on Twitter. And we converse back and forth quite often because I have a lot of pet peeves with Discovery. I don't outright hate the show. And I think that kind of comes across when I'm in the podcast, is people think I hate the show. And I don't. I'm glad that there's Star Trek. I'm glad that there's something. It's just like Transformers. There's a different style and a different thing. At least they reboot when they do it. This is point blank trying to just fit into that continuity in a place where they should have just left it alone. And so one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of people have saying that Star Trek Discovery accomplished the rare feat of making events that I had guessed in advance happen on screen in such a way that was really exciting. It was good to see some familiar faces too. And that's kind of the problem. And I realize that it is nobody's really surprised. It, because you're making it way too obvious of things that are going to happen. I've managed to predict a lot of it too. Such as Valk being Tyler, reconstructed as a human. And I talked about that around the same time everybody else was thinking about it. And then when the Emperor thing, Georgiou, you know, that's about the most obvious choice there. She's not on the Shenzhou, then that's where she's at. So, like, it's kind of annoying, really, to keep track of this series at this point, because you're constantly battling with fans, you're constantly battling with various aspects of the Star Trek world, and I find it very... I don't know. I kind of want there to be this barrier that they kind of just leave things alone. And the show, it's gotten toxic on social media. And I try not to partake too much into the toxic side, more so just the fact that I've predicted something or some of those elements. And there was quite a few conversations that I was involved with, you know, yesterday too, and we were talking, you know, somebody mentioned that, you know, maybe they'll introduce a new Q who will magic them all back to teach them a lesson or something to that degree. And you know, the general consensus is people are tired of pre-Kirk. They want new adventures to tear into, instead of just writing something new. Like, I wish that they would go... There's plenty of time they can go. I mean, you could still do... There's that time span between the 2390s and 2409 that they could have another Klingon in Federation conflict that they could have gone to. They could have had the higher up-to-date looks and technology. They could have because that's kind of a pocket of time that's not really touched on in Star Trek Online, and would give them kind of a nice, you know, 20-year gap to play with, and not really hurt too much. Or they could have gone in the 25th century and gone mid-25th century and done things there. So there's a lot of routes that they could have gone. They could have done, you know, the Starfleet Corps of Engineers. They could have done temporal investigations. They could have done Section 31. These were all shows that myself and Birdman Dodd had brought up way earlier when the announcement of a new Trek series was coming down the pipe. So it's not a new concept. None of this is new concept. It's just the fact that we're getting a show that the hardest part is getting past the fact that they've altered the Klingons with no rhyme or reason why. They've created the Spore Drive, and there's no rhyme or reason how this technology came about or why or where, what happened to it or if anybody's heard about it or a reference point or just anything. And again, I have theories on things that I'll bring up in a little bit. But overall, I find this series to be very annoying in how much they leave just kind of hanging. They tell us the story they want to tell, but then they completely disregard any type of mention of why things are the way they are. And they're like, oh, we'll wrap it up by season one. Well, you know, season one's almost over. That's kind of, you know, get the ball rolling here. So, and then I love the fact that people were calling out the Constitution class starship of the Defiant, which came from the regular timeline around Kirk's era because it was still phasing between time, and due to the Tholians, which again ties into a mirror darkly of Enterprise. And they find it under the Tholians, and it's gone back almost 100 years. Actually, a little bit over 100 years. And so it's sitting there in this timeline and not being touched, and the Archer of that time steals it. And then you get Empress Sato, who takes the ship as her own more or less flagship. So it's been under Terran Empire control for over 100 years. So the graphic that they show, the schematic, why it has the mid nacelles and why it looks more militaristic and more, you know, the wireframe just kind of looks more, I don't know, dark, is because it's been under Terran control for 100 years, this USS Defiant. So therefore, the technology is going to be more up to date because they've had 100 years to play around with this tech. Plus the fact that it came from the Prime Universe, so they've gotten their first kind of Constitution-class starship from the Prime Universe 100 years earlier than they should have. And so I'm with the writers on this particular incident because, you know, they've had years for the Terrans to modify the ship, so it would have needed it by this point with being in operation for that long. But I do believe that Georgiou is using this as her flagship, I think. Because why would you give up the most powerful ship in your fleet if you have it? I also think Georgiou, you know, I guess I'll jump into my predictions. I'm not going to be doing El Carson this episode, although I want to hit that point at some point in the future. But one of the things is I think Georgiou is going to be revealed as the great granddaughter or the granddaughter of Empress Sato in this universe. And then I think that it was more of an inheritance thing. Either that or she, you know, offed somebody and ended up with the ship. I think that Georgiou is also going to be offed by Michael Burnham, because it'll parallel the, you know, her wanting to get over her former captain and the fact that she's going to have to kill this one, whereas the other one she didn't kill. That just was an accident of Takuvma. And so I think that that's going to happen. I think Lorca is from this timeline. I think he is from the Mirror Universe. I think he was either hit with a Tantalus field by Giorgio or somebody else and sent to the regular universe, and that's why he's possibly damaged and he won't let anybody mess with his body, and he's I think he's got a quantum signature all of his own that he's been masking somehow. Which would explain why the random coordinates on the last jump for the spore drive and Stamets kind of referencing, you know, the whole Captain Tilly thing. And I think a lot of this stuff is crossed over between things that they've mentioned briefly. I think that it's very. I think everything you read into it is what you're going to get, essentially. Because we got the mirror thing a while back when Stamets was in front of the mirror. We got the whole thing with Tilly. We got, you know, Giorgio, I figured was going to be the Emperor just based on the fact that she's the only one that they could have had do it in this timeline. And they said that she would be back. And then I think that we're going to have the Doctor. I think he's going to be returned to life through spore regeneration. Much like Stamets was restored in order to converse with his Terran counterpart. I think that those two are going to figure out the mycelial network for the spores and the spore drive and be able to essentially swap their ships back to their correct universe. There will possibly be mention of other Constitution ships, and I hope that they don't alter them all too much. I know that the Defiant, they'll have free reign because it's been there, like I said, over 100 years. But I hope that they don't screw the pooch on the rest of them. And you may get to see Captain Robert April or Christopher Pike on the Enterprise at some point. I think that as far as Tyler is concerned, because he is primarily human at this point, I think we're going to see him either A, they're going to figure out a way to get rid of the Valk programming and mental capacity, or he's going to stand trial as the Klingon scum he is. I think they're using this also as their way of saying that, look, they started modifying them as spies, and then they were disgraced because Federation found out about them, and so I think this is going to be their way of saying it happened, even though they're not going to even reference the virus or anything that came before in Enterprise, even though it all kind of is supposed to be connected. Because I definitely see that kind of coming down the pipe as something that they've not thought of. And again, we'll see. I hope that they can restore the Klingons to how they should look, and this is just a weird mutagenic set of Klingon houses, factions that are being wiped out by the regular Klingons that look normal or something to that degree. I think the spore drive will be destroyed or deemed too dangerous upon return to the Prime Universe in favor of working on transwarp technology, which was discovered during Enterprise by the Borg technology in the Antarctic. So I think that they're going to start reverse engineering that and starting to kind of work on that capability. But yeah, I mean, those are some of my predictions. I have a lot of harebrained ideas and thoughts on it, but and they also insinuated that Burnham was going to be captain of the Shenzhou, or I can't even say that stupid ship's name, but they insinuated she was going to be the captain of it, all the, you know, at some point, when in the second episode or first episode with Giorgio talking to her about, you know, getting a shot at the chair. So I kind of think that everything's you can, everything you read into the vocals, the text, I think that you're going to get what you expect out of it. And it's going to be interesting, to say the least. So I'm going to take a quick break, come back on the other side with the Wolf Inside review, and then after that, close out the show. So I'll be back after this. So, The Wolf Inside. I rather liked this episode. I've liked it since they've hit the Mirror Universe, honestly. I've not liked a lot of the Klingon stuff. I've liked more of when they've been in this, because it's more of a struggle for them and more of a feeling of DS9 without being DS9. And they didn't have as memorable of a scenario. But I do like how Stamets is restored using the Spore Network. And is thought to have died, but comes back and is communicating with his Terran counterpart. I like how Tilly is showing incentive enough to get put into the command program. Whether she lives or dies or not through this series is to be to be of future notice, to see if that happens. But she I think will stick around for a while. Saru is showing some backbone, which is nice. Lorca, it was nice to see him come out of the Agonizer, and have a conversation and kind of show him a little bit battered but still, you know, very much there. Like it almost seems like he's conditioned to be able to suffer but be able to handle it at the same time. So I think that he's had a bout in it before, which is why he's not too concerned with it. I also like how Burnham mentions that it's very easy for her to fall into this status of the being captain and just kind of willy-nilly just watching people get put to death and everything else, and it's too easy for her to do that. And finally getting the programming broke on Valk, who is Tyler, by seeing his mirror counterpart, and it throws him, and he finally is finally revealed to be the wolf inside that he is, and getting to see Sarek on the other side, because it just shows that this is just another thing that Spock and Sarek are in opposition of in this universe, because Spock is, of course, Terran Empire, and his father is not. So it's kind of interesting to see that kind of play out as the series goes. And then you get to see a new version of a Tellarite. You get to see a new version of a Andorian, which neither one of them are all that much changed. They're not that bad. So it's still pretty close to home. The Tellarite's a little bit wonkier, but I'll give it a pass, because haven't really had any main cast Tellarites, and they've changed him a couple times over the decades, more than the Klingons. And it's just been interesting to look at the various aspects of this episode, and then I love how they played it out all the way to the very bitter end about Giorgio being in charge, and you get to see Tyler, because of his mutiny and his trying to kill the captain, and Mirror Saru throws him off, which was awesome to see him kind of waiting hand and foot on Burnham. It's still funny that she neglected to tell Saru about seeing his counterpart. Probably because she didn't want to embarrass him or upset him that he waits on her hand and foot in the other universe. And but it's funny that he saved her, and then Tyler gets beamed into space, which gets picked up by Discovery with the Defiant information, which means that now Burnham and Lorca have to get off of that ship, off the Shenzhou and off of the Empress's capital location. So we'll find out about that more next episode too. But I think that it's quite interesting just how things are changing and ramping up as we're closing out to the end of the season. Because I don't think there's that many episodes left. I think there's like 4 or 5 episodes left, and then it's done until season 2. And so I'm enjoying what we're getting now more than I got the first half of the season. I feel that the first half is very weak. Although I feel like the mirror thing is completely overrated in a sense, because we never really got a true sense of their personas. There was too much flip-flopping on everybody in that first half. And so I feel like we never really get to see the characters. Like I feel like the mirror thing should have been a season 2 thing. I don't think it should have been a season 1. So, or at the very least, the end of season 1. I don't think we've had enough room for them to grow to kind of gauge whether that's something out of their polar norm in the series. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. And I want for some of these changes to happen. I want for some of these things to improve, but we'll just have to wait and see what the writers do. If you guys have any tips or ideas of what you think may happen this season, leading up to next season, even how, like, maybe the next few episodes are going to go, or the season finale. I think we're going to get to the season finale, and I think we're going to have some loss of main characters. I think we're going to get them back to their home universe, but I don't think it's going to be the same time. I think Discovery is going to be completely gone from the 23rd century when it comes back. This is just me spitballing and throwing it out there, just because this would just be a further nail on the coffin and kind of ramp it up. Because if they've mentioned how they want to go Game of Thrones style, so nothing really works out. And so if you're going in that route, I think that they may end up in another timeline. Or another time period, if anything. But they may not, because they said that they have 10 years to span out between now and Kirk. So it's going to be a giant game of cat and mouse trying to figure out what's going on and what's going to happen and what's not. And it's going to be an adventure for sure. They do have people guessing good buzz or bad buzz on Twitter. It's still buzz, so CBS doesn't care. I still don't like the fact that you can't get it on Netflix or Hulu or on CBS, and you have to pay for their stupid app, which I wait for it to be streaming elsewhere, because I just think that it's a bit ridiculous that they're charging more for a stupid app. And I was like, I would have kept my Netflix subscription had they kept Star Trek in the lineup, but because they didn't, I ditched my Netflix and stuck with Hulu and PureFlix and other things like that. So I'm kind of on the fence on that. I want to support the show just for the sake of supporting it, but I still think the Orville is a better gauge, and it fits more in that future timeline than this does. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's been fun. That's all I gotta say. So anyways, what are some things that stood out to you in this episode? What are some things that shocked you? What are some things that you just kind of knew were going to happen, just based on things we've gotten in the past? Let me know. Tweet at me, at SCP21 on Twitter or at Altered Geek. You can find this episode on thisweekingeek.net, alteredgeek.com, geekcastradio.com, among other places. And you can also find it on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on a variety of other places. So, Blog Talk Radio. So, until next time, journey into the final frontier and engage.